I'm Aaron Henkin. Welcome to Life in the Balance, a monthly radio show here on WYPR that's a unique hybrid of policy talk and first-person storytelling. We build each episode of this program around the real-life stories of people, around the lives that literally hang in the balance, you could say, in one way or another. And then we invite folks from the policy and academic and nonprofit worlds to listen along with us to that person's story, and we challenge them to share their insights about the larger social and political and economic issues at play. Life in the Balance is a monthly feature here on WYPR. We've covered a variety of issues on the show, from disability rights to adult literacy, and you can listen to these episodes at wypr.org/lifeinthebalance on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download your podcasts. Today on the show, we're going to be exploring the growing green economy, solar panel installation, brownfield testing, weatherization, construction. All these specializations are areas of what is now being referred to as the green collar economy, a growing and important sector of our local and federal economies. We'll also be exploring how a change in career and the opportunity to learn a trade, in this case, a green trade, can truly change a person's life. We're going to spend the first portion of this program getting to know a woman named Shakia Dawkins. She's a recent graduate of the Civic Works Green Careers Training Program.
My name is Shakia Dawkins. I work at KCI Technologies. It's a great job, actually. I'm in the industrial hygiene department. So my job category right now is a scientist in training. And I just got my asbestos inspector license. I'm going for my lead inspector and risk assessor license. And I do a lot of inspections, surveys, lead paint surveys, air monitoring, abatement monitoring. So it's kind of, you know, interesting. Well, I had a good childhood. My dad wasn't really in the picture too much, but I moved with my great-grandmother after her husband died. So she was lonely and she was depressed, and I was only 2 years old. So I went and lived with her, and I just stayed. You know, like, I would go and see my mom on the weekends, and you know, we would spend time, and I would spend holidays with my mother, but I would always make sure I came back on Christmas Day to see my great-grandmother and, you know, get gifts and exchange gifts and stuff. So it was kind of confusing as a child, like, why don't I live with my mom, you know? Why don't I live with my mom and my dad like my friends do? But I think it was, like, an amazing experience. She taught me a lot that I don't think I would have gotten from, you know, from my mom because of the age difference. You know, when you're older, you're wiser. She taught me to wash clothes and carry myself like a lady and, oh, you don't wear short dresses to church and, you know, stuff like that. So she was a great woman. She was great. Yeah.
Tell me, what neighborhood did you grow up in?
In Northeast Baltimore on Linton Avenue.
Tell me about school. Like, what kind of a student were you?
I was an excellent student. Like, school was a getaway to me. Like, I loved to read from the time I could hold a book in my hand. I was reading. I excelled in academics, like, just books and taking tests and everything. Like, I got excellent grades, and even up until high school, you know, like, I graduated with honors from Baltimore City College. I started college, but that's when I kind of fell off track. You know, I didn't finish at Coppin, but it's all good. I found Civic Works, and my life is like on another track that I didn't even expect.
Tell me about that chapter of your life, that bump in the road you hit, or whatever you want to call it. You graduated with honors from City College.
Yeah.
And then take me back to, like, that time in your life when you finished high school, sort of like where you were at in your head, what you were imagining for your future, what you wanted to do, what you wanted to study.
Well, I wanted to be a nurse. So when I graduated from City, I enrolled at Coppin, but I was also, I had just, like, got a boyfriend. And we were just, you know, in that infatuation phase and just, oh, I'm just head over heels in love. And, you know, school was important, but I also had a baby in the process. So, you know, my daughter was born and I had to work. I had to take care of her. We both were working and he's great. We're still together. We have two kids now, two daughters. They're 5 and 9, Shania and Ajay. And they are excellent kids. Their dad is great. He's a great, you know, he pushes me. He's a great support system.
Take me back to the those conversations that you and your guy had sort of when you let him know that you guys were going to be parents and just sort of like how that kind of changed the future plans for you.
Well, actually, it was like he was ecstatic. There was no fear for him at all. Like, I was like, we found out at the same time. I went to the hospital because I pulled a muscle in my back. And they came back in the room like, do you have any kids? It's like, no. Oh, well, you do now. Like, you're going to be a mom. Like, oh, my God. You know, and he was like, oh, I'm so happy. I got to call somebody. And he was, like, running around the room. And I was just, like, in shock, you know. But she was the biggest blessing for both of us. Like, Shania has taught us both patience and love and what it means to, you know, actually love someone else more than yourself, you know. Like, she's excellent. She's still just like a ball of energy. She's so sympathetic and empathetic, and she feels greatly. Like, if somebody else is hurting, she's like, oh, that's so sad, you know. And it's she's like a little angel, my little guardian angel.
So along with the joy of finding out about her came needing to rearrange some plans. And so talk to me about sort of what happened with college and what kind of work you ended up doing instead.
I think I was working at Sally's, the beauty supply store, and he was working doing security. And I mean, he pretty much kind of took over, but at the same time, we knew this wasn't going to be enough. We had to secure the future, you know. So, I mean, it was a lot of struggle and a lot of sacrifice. And when our second daughter was born, when Najee was born, she was born with kind of a heart issue. Like, they thought she was going to be like a real sickly baby. Like, she wouldn't make it to be one. So they pretty much told me this, like, they were telling me, oh, well, you're having a girl. You know, it was no ease or anything. So that was added stress too. But when I went to deliver her, she only had a small hole in her heart. It went from like 7 holes to 1. You know, that really, and that right there kind of taught me, like, I just have so much more love for my children. Like, wow, like, I could have lost my baby, you know, like, as a baby. So that was kind of rough. But he got his CDLs when she was almost a year old, and he was...
That's commercial driver's license.
Yes, and he's been supporting us, and he had a few injuries, a spinal injury and a shoulder injury, so he's kind of, you know, down on his luck right now and trying to fight with... It's just a big mess with that, you know, with his job and workers' comp and stuff like that. So, you know, it's pretty much like, I'm not going to say all on me, but I support the family a lot. But I like that. I'm able to do that since graduating from the Civic Works Brownfields course. My little sister, her father graduated from Civic Works as well in the Brownsville course. And he graduated in, I think, 2017. So I sat down and I talked to him. He was just letting me know, you know, I think you'll be great for this program. And I kind of brushed it off for a while, like, I don't know. And I finally looked into it. He just kept telling me, like, come on, you got to do it, you got to do it. And I was just complaining about my job, like, I hate my job. I finally listened, and I contacted Civic Works, and I got the interview and everything, and I was ready. And then my great-grandmother died. Like, she got sick all of a sudden, like, boom. And within not even a month, she passed. And it was just, like, just crushing, you know. Like, I didn't want to do anything. Like, so I kind of contemplated whether I was going to do the program or not. And I did. Something just pushed me, like, just go, you know. And I went. Everybody around me was telling me to do it. Like, go ahead. Like, you need to go. It'll be great. You can get out the house. You won't think about it so much. And, you know, so I'm really glad that I did take heed and I did complete the program, because it's been nothing but like prosperity ever since. Like, I have my struggles, but I didn't even picture this for my life at all.
It sounds like one of the other important sort of pieces of this is that you found work that feels meaningful to you. Yeah. As well, right? Talk about the maybe what's important about having a sense of purpose in your work.
I feel like, because asbestos is so harmful, like, I love the fact that I can go and sample materials in a house, and before they rent it or sell it or tear it down and make all of these fumes for the environment to absorb, all the bad stuff is taken out. You know, I feel like I'm helping to save some people, you know, like. And even with me about to get my lead cert, like my lead inspector certification, it's just like I will help a child not get lead poisoning. You know, like I'm helping towards the big picture, you know, like, because asbestos, the effects of it, you're not gonna feel until 30 to 50 years later, you know? So it's not like, unless you're consuming it, you're eating it every day, you know, you might be dead in 10 years. But it's just, it's like, I just feel, I don't know, I feel good. Like, I actually help with, you know, the environment. Like, I'm helping to take some bad stuff out. And there's so many toxic things here, but I get to help with, you know, a few. I like that.
So take me back to your graduation day. In the audience are friends and family, people, well-wishers, but also potential employers.
Yes.
And it's your job to give the valedictorian speech.
Yep. So I gave my speech, and Brian and Kamau loved my speech. And Kamau is actually my boss. Brian is like a mentor to me. He's been teaching me the ropes, everything I need to know about industrial hygiene. But they were just happy to meet with me and like, oh yeah, I would love to talk to you afterwards. And I want you to fill out an application. And the day after, the morning after graduation was the job fair. And I filled out my application, got the information from Brian. I did my application online. And I think 2 days later, he was calling me to come out and work. And I've been pretty much with KCI ever since.
What do you remember about the speech you gave? Do you remember what you said?
Well, I talked about hard work, pretty much just doing it. Like, people give so many excuses as to, oh, well, I can't because, like, just cut that out. Just do it. Just don't stop saying why you can't, and try to make it possible for you to actually achieve your goal. Don't just say what you want to be. What are you doing to be what you want to be? Do it. You know, like, I took a leap of faith, like, hey, let me just go ahead and do this program. And it was like the best decision of my life. Like, I can take my kids in any store and buy them whatever they ask me to buy. It doesn't have to be, oh, mommy doesn't have money yet. I don't have any money. No, not this time. And, you know, I can spoil my children. Like, I didn't even expect to work in a company where the benefits are excellent. The time off, they give me time off if I need it. Even if it's like a field trip for my daughter. Oh, sure, put it on your calendar. You can take off. Like, what? Like, it's the best decision that I have ever made.
Shakia Dawkins, graduate of Civic Works Green Training Program and current scientist in training with KCI Technologies. You're tuned to Life in the Balance. I'm Aaron Henkin, and when we get back, we'll get a tour of the Green Careers Classrooms and Training Center. We'll also get a chance to speak with the director of the program to learn how this all works and how more people like Shakia can benefit from the training programs. Stay tuned. I'm Aaron Henkin. Welcome back to Life in the Balance. So far on the show today, we've heard the story of Shakia Dawkins. She's a 2018 graduate of Civic Works Baltimore Green Careers Center. Thanks to her training with Civic Works, she's gone on to a job as a scientist in training with KCI Technologies, with a focus on environmental science. Her life, in her own words, has been radically transformed by the training she received. We had the opportunity to visit the new training center where a weatherization class was underway and trainees were learning the ins and outs of the trade. We're going to pause here and take a listen to our tour of the facility.
My name is Karim Peoples. I'm the field manager here at Civic Works, and we're about to enter our classroom area where we do weatherizations, brownfields, cool roofing, and solar training. So,
great. I'll follow you.
So this is our classroom area. On the left, we have a mock house. We designed this to be exactly like our Baltimore City row house so that the guys in weatherization can go inside and perform the same type of training techniques that they're going to perform inside the people's houses that we weatherize. So that's what this model's for. Then in the middle, we have dense pack models for the guys to learn how to dense pack cellulose insulation inside a sealed wall cavity. Then this space that they're building right now, this is a confined space model for our brownfields and hazardous waste removal crew. They drop themselves inside of there to make sure they're not afraid of any type of confined spaces. It simulates a sewer system. And on the right here, we have a solar roof model where the guys assemble solar roof panels before they get to go out on a real homeowner's house. So every situation that you can go out in the field and get yourself into, we try to simulate here inside the classroom. So these guys are in a weatherization class. Some of them are permanent staff members. They help with assisting and training the new people. And a few of them are in the actual weatherization training program.
Take a walk through the house?
Yeah.
Okay.
So this is our model house. We tried to cover all bases in here. This is the kitchen and living room area that you're standing in now. This is a bedroom area. That hole in the ceiling is the attic access that they'll climb in and get to the attic that's above us. So they get to practice walking through attics before they get inside of a real homeowner's house. And this would be our bathroom that we're still under construction. And it actually comes equipped with a bathroom fan. So the guys learn how to install bathroom fans, run the electricity. So they did all the building in here, ran all the electricity. It's got everything except plumbing. So.
And so when it's sort of finished out, it'll be purposefully incomplete or have parts that you can remove and then redo
exactly.
So that everyone can learn.
Whole center wall here will be dense packed by the new weatherization class. They'll come in, they'll learn how to cut small holes inside the drywall, pump in the insulation, get it to the proper depth, and then seal it back up and patch it. So they get to get that real world simulation inside of here. And then at the end of their class, they'll tear all the drywall out. The next class will come in, reinstall the drywall, and start the process all over again.
How long do the trainings last?
Yeah. Weatherization is 3 months.
It's cool. How'd you get into this?
I got in as a volunteer, actually. I started as a volunteer 8 years ago. I volunteered for a little while, and then they hired me on as a permanent staff member, and I've been here ever since.
A brief tour there of the classroom area at Civic Works Green Careers. And now that we've gotten an inside look at the facilities, we're going to learn more about the program itself, how it all works, and how more people can take advantage of their services. We want to welcome to the program Eli Allen, Director of Civic Works Baltimore Center for Green Careers. And Eli, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Aaron, for having me.
Tell us about how Civic Works as an organization works at large and how your program, Baltimore Center for Green Careers, fits into that bigger picture.
Oh, definitely. So Civic Works is focused on strengthening communities in Baltimore through education, skills development, and community service. And as Civic Works is Baltimore Center for Green Careers, really the mission of our work is to expand access to quality employment for Baltimore residents from historically marginalized communities. And we think of that mission and our objectives in two ways. One, as we kind of, you know, did with, you know, worked with Shakia, to ensure Baltimore residents have the skills, qualifications, credentials, and support to succeed in a growing career field, Baltimore. We also work with employers to raise standards around quality employment and practices to ensure that there are more quality jobs out there for Baltimore job seekers.
You talk about historically marginalized populations. Say more about that. We heard from Shakia Dawkins last segment. She kind of found herself in a rut at work. She felt kind of lost. She was struggling financially. Is her story a typical story? What kinds of backgrounds are your trainees coming from?
Yeah, her story is typical. And you know, everyone we serve is generally, you know, finds themselves in a situation where they're locked out of quality employment. For, you know, what are often, you know, systemic reasons, kind of that are the root cause of that challenge. We oftentimes think of the work we do as addressing, in part, broken systems, not broken people. We recognize that, you know, everyone who comes in our doors have incredible talent and drive and ambition. Generally, there's these external systems that are preventing them from accessing a quality job. So that ranges from a criminal record. When we know that people of color in Baltimore are disproportionately impacted by the criminal justice system, and just having that record can lead to employment discrimination and lack of access to quality jobs. We also know that, you know, Baltimore is a city where a car is almost required to travel to a job and have your choice of employment, but it can be incredibly expensive and difficult to obtain and have a valid driver's license, and then purchase a vehicle and maintain all of the insurance, other costs associated with that. And we know, too, that, you know, we have historically underinvested in our residents across Baltimore, and especially low-income people of color in the city. And so ensuring that participants in our program have portable credentials, industry-recognized training, so they have something to take with them of value that they can then command a good-paying job in the Baltimore labor market.
And so in addition to the specific job skill training, you guys provide a number of, like, other wraparound mm-hmm. services to help folks reach their potential in the job market. Talk about some of these various services, like the bigger picture of how you support these trainees.
Definitely. So we, again, we recognize that because of these systems that lock people out of employment, that's incumbent on us to ensure people have the support they need to be successful in the job market. And so the wraparound services we provide range from everything from legal services. So we partner with the Maryland Volunteer Lawyers Services to ensure people receive expungement services and civil legal aid to address everything from, you know, housing issues with a landlord, to issues with child support, to obtaining a valid driver's license. A big part of our work is ensuring that Baltimore residents do have a valid driver's license by graduation. That's sort of a commitment we make to every person who enrolls. So that includes everything from driver's ed to petitioning judges in Baltimore. So someone has a license that is no longer valid because of traffic citations or other legal issues, we'll petition a judge to reopen the case, and we'll work to ensure that by the end of the program, someone has a valid license. We also work to help people purchase vehicles as well, knowing that transportation is essential. Work around issues of child support obligations, knowing that so the maximum child support obligation in Baltimore is 65%. So if 65% of your income is being garnished every pay period, that provides, you know, very little incentive to remain in the above ground economy. So we kind of work to ensure that those issues are addressed.
And you guys do this all for free, is that right? How do you get funded? How do you pay for these services?
So we have incredible partners, funders across Baltimore who kind of believe and in this work. And believe that kind of workforce development services and wraparound case management services are essential for connecting Baltimore residents with quality jobs. So local funders, philanthropic partners, the funders at the state level and the federal level help us kind of do what we do and serve Baltimore residents.
So when you have an incoming class of new trainees, do they know what specific program they want to do? Do you present options? I mean, how do people get, you know, pointed in different directions into different areas of specialization?
That's a great question. So kind of someone, you know, process of specializing or deciding on one of these different training tracks starts with our information session. So in that info session, we'll present the different training tracks, and they all have different sorts of physical requirements and advancement opportunities and kind of skill requirements. So we'll complete that presentation, and then each participant will kind of express which training tracks they're interested in based on the information. And then we have two rounds of interviews. And in those interviews, we kind of do a deep dive into someone's work experience. We'll oftentimes do a work simulation too. So someone's interested in, say, pursuing solar. Well, then do a simulation where they go up on a ladder, you know, at heights, and see if they're afraid of heights. Or for weatherization, say, ask someone to go into our hands-on training lab into a confined space attic cavity and see if that's a fit or not. And then based on that kind of conversation, that interview, we'll match someone with the best training track. So by the time someone starts, they're in the training track that they've selected and we've kind of determined is the best match for them on day one.
Yeah, I guess the idea of doing solar panel installation is really cool in the abstract until you realize that you're terrified of heights.
Oh, we find that often the training that's of most interest to people when they walk in the door is solar, right? It's the thing that's flashiest, that's in the news, people are excited about. But by the time someone goes up on the ladder, there's oftentimes a different training track that's now better up their alley.
It's a good policy to let people try out each sort of physical scenario. Give me a sense of how big this program is, this training program overall. Are you putting 10 trainees through a month, 100? Give us a sense of the scale of this operation.
So we train about 120 people every year for Green Careers. Overall, we're graduating about 85% of those enrollees, and about 90% of our graduates are placed with one of our employer partners. Also, generally, average wage at placement is about $15.25 an hour. We're training about 10 to 12 people a month, and the length of training also varies. So Shakia Dawkins is an example of someone who graduated from our kind of condensed 6-week training program in brownfields remediation, where we deliver 7 different industry recognized credentials and then connect everyone with employers through a career fair immediately after graduation. Our other training tracks, the skills required for placement employment require a bit more experience. And so our weatherization, solar, and stormwater training tracks are each about 3 months long. And within that 3 months, we have 2 months of paid on-the-job training. And so as Civic Works, we operate a social enterprise that's more or less a contractor in Baltimore, where we go out and weatherize the homes of Baltimore residents, install solar for Baltimore residents. And that allows our participants to gain, you know, crucial job skills, work experience, allows us as sort of their employer for that period of time to strongly recommend each graduate to an employer and make a match in a way that an employer doesn't have when they're hiring on the open job market.
This program is interesting to me because it seems to be a really practical marriage of certain social justice principles and certain really sound, sustainable sort of business principles. You guys, I mean, you provide a valuable service to potential employers as well as the people who are coming to the program.
We do. And it's a really important match, I think. And on the employer side, we think, you know, we see it what we do as, you know, this incredibly valuable talent, HR, hiring service that we're providing to companies. And I think because of the high level of value that provides, it allows us also to set standards with those employers. And so not every company can come to our Civic Works Center for Green Careers and say, hey, I want to hire some graduates. We require that they kind of demonstrate to us that this is going to be a quality job that's going to offer someone, you know, financial stability, benefits, as well as opportunities for career advancements. I think you heard from Shakia talking about the incredible opportunity she has at KCI and all the ways that KCI kind of models themselves as a good employer, providing the, an opportunity that's meaningful, that has purpose, also provides good wages, good benefits, and understands that, once in a while, life happens, and, work with their employees to ensure that they can have that work-life balance and succeed in their career.
Yeah, you were hanging out in the room when we interviewed Shakia, and I know you were happy to hear the joy in her voice when she talked about the impact that Civic Works has had on her life. Maybe just speak in a general way about how impactful these training programs can be for individual graduates and just their futures.
Yeah, we hear so often from graduates that because of the these systemic issues the Baltimore residents face around accessing employment, whether it's a criminal record and employer discrimination or just an inability to access a valid driver's license, that someone can feel like in such a hole that there's little opportunity or option available to build a family-sustaining career. And then, I think in, a 3-4 month period or 6 weeks in, in the case of Shakia, we're able to, address those systemic issues facing graduates, ensure that our participants have the skills and credentials they need, and then launch into a career. And so we stay in touch with each of our graduates for at least 2 years after they complete our program. And so for us, retention and career advancement is sort of our most important measure of success for each of our participants. And so we hear from participants, as with Shakia, like with each promotion they get, each professional development opportunity, skill they've built, credential they've attained with the employer, and just the broader impact, whether it's being able to buy a house, to build a life with their family that really reflects their values and has the stability that they need to be successful.
As an organization, the Baltimore Center for Green Careers is doing good, and it's obviously doing really well, too. You guys have moved into a new space. You've expanded. You got brand new offices and this brand new training facility. I mean, what's next in your own strategic plan? Are you guys growing, accepting more people?
Our goal is to really continue our growth. And I think this new space we moved into will be a crucial component of that. And so we've expanded from a building with 2 classrooms to 4, a much larger hands-on training space. And kind of a key part of that is one, deepening the level of services and support for each participant so we can make sure that in this enhanced hands-on lab that we have where participants, hone their carpentry skills, their weatherization skills, electrical, if they're working in solar, and so they kind of really deepen their level of practice to kind of better jumpstart their career in one of these fields. In addition, our goal is to continue to grow the number of participants that we train. Just about 3-4 years ago, we were training half the number of participants that we train today. And our goal is continue to grow that number, offer more classes, and continue to be a broader resource for the Baltimore community. So a place where someone wants an OSHA training, something else, that we're a resource to go to within the city, accessible by public transit, to kind of build skills and connect with employers.
Eli, how did you get into this yourself, into the Baltimore Center for Green Careers and under the wing of Civic Works? I mean, what's your stake in this?
Yeah, so I've been with Civic Works since 2009, so about 9 years. And I was drawn to Civic Works and the Center for Green Careers in part by the mission. I was actually living in D.C. Working on some policy work, but really drawn by the level of kind of deep community engagement and deep level of kind of change, systems change that was happening through Civic Works. And this mission that kind of works at the intersection of advancing environmental justice and economic justice, and recognizing the level of kind of underinvestment in Baltimore communities, both when it comes to environmental issues and employment, and kind of bridging those two and recognizing that as we build a more sustainable city, that we have this opportunity to create employment opportunities for city residents that have incredible potential.
Before I let you go, let me just give you a chance to let listeners know how to get in touch with the Baltimore Center for Green Careers and the different programs that you've got going on.
So CivicWorks is kind of always looking for Baltimore residents interested in being involved, partnering with us, or enrolling in one of our available training tracks. People can go to civicworks.com to learn more about our opportunities, or give us a call at 410-929-6120. And one opportunity is that we have an open information session every Tuesday at 1 p.m. at our training center. We encourage anyone who's interested in learning more, seeing if this is an opportunity that could be a match, can show up at the training center, attend the info session, and kind of explore if this is a career opportunity that could be a good next step.
Eli Allen is director of CivicWorks Baltimore Center for Green Careers. And Eli, thank you for taking the time to join us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Life in the Balance. I'm Aaron Henkin. Coming up after the break, how Maryland is working in a larger way towards sustainability, and how economics and environmentalism can be partners toward a greener and more prosperous world. We're joined by faculty members at the Environmental Finance Center at the University of Maryland. Stay tuned. I'm Aaron Henkin. Welcome back to Life in the Balance. Today on the show, we've been learning all about the green economy and how people here in Baltimore City are benefiting from job training programs that focus on sustainability and the environment. Earlier this show, we met Shakia Dawkins. She's a graduate of CivicWorks Green Careers Brownsfield program. We also heard this hour from Eli Allen, director of the center. We're going to widen our focus a bit now and learn more about some other sustainability programs happening right here in Maryland. And we want to welcome to the program Medessa Burian. She's Program Manager, Municipal Online Stormwater Training, MOST Center. Also joining us is Mike Hunninghake. He's Program Manager, Sustainable Maryland. And they are both affiliated with the Environmental Finance Center at the University of Maryland. And from that center, we're joined by the interim director, Jen Cotting. So, Medessa, Mike, Jen, welcome to all three of you.
Thank you very much.
Good to be here.
Jen, I want to start with you. Can you explain in a general way to our listeners what the Environmental Finance Center is? I'm guessing environmentalism and finance aren't always linked in people's minds.
Absolutely, Aaron. So the Environmental Finance Center really operates like a technical assistance and outreach arm of the University of Maryland. We're located here in College Park. We actually work throughout the Mid-Atlantic region, and we've been doing this for about 25 years now. And at the core of our mission is really rolling up our sleeves and working to help communities throughout the Mid-Atlantic identify ways to pay for the resource protection and restoration activities that they have identified as priorities locally. So there are a lot of communities out there who want to be more sustainable, they want to be more resilient, they want to improve the local economy and the quality of life, but it can be really hard for these communities to know where to start. And, you know, looking at the big picture, it's very there's very little they're going to be able to get done if they haven't given some thought to how they're going to pay for what they want to do. And that's where EFC can come in and help.
Jen Cotting, earlier in this program, we spoke with Shakia Dawkins. She's a recent graduate of CivicWorks Center for Green Careers. She's doing really well in her new career as a scientist in training. She's doing things like ensuring houses are free of asbestos and that construction sites properly dispose of toxic waste. This is a good, stable job, and she's helping the environment at the same time. Talk about the green-collar economy from a labor perspective. Is this a growing field? I think, you know, some people still tend to think of green careers as a very niche area.
I think that's really not going to be the case for very long. And CivicWorks has an amazing program, and I'm glad she's had that experience with them. I think we're at one point going to reach a point where we don't talk about green jobs anymore, that component is just sort of folded into all of the work that we do. But I do think we're seeing expansions into green management of stormwater, green infrastructure practices. There's a lot of job training programs that revolve around how to maintain green infrastructure. There's the Civic Works program model. There's the solar energy field. There's a lot of recycling and waste management opportunities. I think we see it growing, and I think that's only going to continue by leaps and bounds.
That's Jen Cotting, Interim Director of the Environmental Finance Center at the University of Maryland. And Mike Hunninghake, Program Manager, Sustainable Maryland, I want to turn to you now. Let's talk big picture. Is sustainability a priority at the federal level? What kind of cooperation, progress are we seeing or not seeing on issues of climate change and sustainability?
Thanks, Aaron. I think it's fairly clear to me and my colleagues that sustainability in its broadest sense is not a priority at the federal level at the moment. And I think where we are seeing progress on issues of climate and sustainability is with the states and local governments. You see cities and states recommitting to the Paris Climate Agreement, and you see them enacting the policies and implementing the actions that need to be done to reduce our emissions, to ensure clean water, and all the other things that the sustainability programs at the local government level should be doing. Unfortunately, I think we're going to have to wait for change to occur at the top the federal government to swing its priorities back where they should be.
In the meantime, though, it sounds like states and municipalities are taking it upon themselves to do what they can. Medessa, let me turn to you now and ask you to talk about some of the work that you all do specifically. What is the Municipal Online Stormwater Training Center and what sources resources does it offer?
Okay, yes, the Municipal Online Stormwater Training, or MOST Center, which of course is housed here at the University of Maryland Environmental Finance Center. It was really established back in 2015 to help bridge a gap that we were seeing in the community in terms of local governments didn't have the budget, the time, or the resources to travel for in-person education and training on stormwater management. So we created an online platform that houses interactive on-demand courses, videos. We have a resource center, and last year we started including case stories that really demonstrate success of stormwater management at a local level. We aim to deliver that educational content in a really engaging, user-friendly, free, and on-demand format. So this really is a resource to help communities better understand and access and improve their stormwater management programs.
Mike Hunninghake of Sustainable Maryland, I want to turn back to you. I didn't give you a chance yet to talk about Sustainable Maryland. What is the program? How does it work?
Sustainable Maryland is an initiative by the Environmental Finance Center that started in 2012. And the goal is to help municipalities in Maryland choose a direction for their sustainability efforts, help improve access to resources needed to implement these actions, help them measure their progress, and then have them recognized through the certification program that we have them recognized for their accomplishments. The program's open to incorporated municipalities all across the state. We help these towns and cities organize green teams, select projects from a menu of actions that we have, provide them with technical assistance to complete these actions, and connect them to their peers in a network across the state.
Let me ask a question to all three of you. Medessa, Mike, Jen, are you guys generally optimistic about the growth of the green economy? What do we all need to be doing to ensure that our economic priorities and our environmental and sustainable priorities align in a meaningful way. Jen, it's hard when three people are asked the same question. I'll line you guys up. Jen, why don't you go ahead first?
One of the things that I think has us really optimistic for the growth of the green economy is what we're seeing, quite honestly, in the private sector. You know, we're seeing a vast expanse of corporations that are beginning to recognize that paying attention to sustainability is good for their bottom line. It's not just good PR. It's a good business practice. It's an opportunity to function more efficiently. It's an opportunity to have a happier workforce. It's an opportunity to be to reduce costs by, for example, if you're a beverage company and you're protecting source water in the area, you're going to have reduced treatment costs to be able to use that water to produce your product. So these are the kind of supply chain implications that really have got the corporate arena moving forward on this. And I think as other folks see this movement on the corporate stage, that we're going to be seeing that's more broadly adopted, because we're seeing if Coca-Cola or Nike or, you know, fill in the blank can do it, then it's doable for any of us.
Mike Hunninghake, your thoughts?
Well, out in the field, we see a lot of projects completed in municipalities that involve small businesses. So the solar panels that are installed on the roof of City Hall are done by local companies, people who've been trained to do this type of work, and it's expanding every year, the amount of solar capacity in the state. You see small companies that are setting up composting businesses, where they will partner with a municipality and collect food scraps from residential households and compost that material. You're seeing electric cars and charging stations cropping up all over the place into a network across the state. People need to install those. So you're seeing a lot of skills and backgrounds that feed into sustainability and the green economy.
Medessa Burian, I'm going to turn it over to you for the last word.
You know, I get hope from the younger generation. We work with a lot of students here at the university as a part of our efforts, and I would say that sustainability and climate resilience issues are really embedded into the fabric of their being. It's important to them, and they are really demanding that from their places of work when they go out into the world. So this makes me very optimistic for the future of the green economy.
Medessa Burian, Program Manager of Municipal Online Stormwater Training Center, and Mike Hunninghake, Program Manager of Sustainable Maryland, and Jen Cotting, Interim Director of the Environmental Finance Center at the University of Maryland. Thank you, all three of you, for joining us today.
You're very welcome.
Thank you.
On this show, we'd like to give the last word to our featured guest, in this case, Shakia Dawkins, who overcame feeling lost, financially unstable, and is now thriving in her own new green career. She wanted to make sure that she got a chance to encourage anyone who's feeling like she did at one point, in a rut, lost, confused, to look into Civic Works.
This is changing. It's life changing. It's like you can go from having absolutely nothing and in 2 months have a job. And they encourage you to fix your license and better yourself. And they try to, if you can't get government assistance, they'll try to get you government assistance. They'll try to get you food stamps or medical assistance or whatever you're lacking and you need. If you are home or if you don't have food, you know, they'll help you. If you don't have clothes, they have clothes that they'll give to you. It's just like, this is great. This is like one of the best things in Baltimore City, with all of the crime and all of the negativity. It Civic Works is amazing. It's like a godsend. And I just feel like it needs to be publicized a whole lot more than it is.
Shakia Dawkins with the last word here on this episode of Life in the Balance, an original monthly feature on WYPR. The show airs the first Wednesday of the month at 1 p.m. and again at 9 p.m. Life in the Balance is produced and edited by Katie Marquette. You can listen to previous episodes online at wypr.org/podcastcentral. For 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station, I'm Aaron Henkin. Thanks for listening.